This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Yes, that's right, we're on Community Radio 3CR. I am, in fact, Jacob, and my voice is a little bit shot to the shit today, so people are going to have to put up with it, maybe.
A little bit croaky there.
Bit of a croak, a bit of a cold, but yeah, here we are, Radical Radio, 855 in your AM dial, through 3CR Digital, through all the W's at 3cr.org.au. And when we finally get the podcasts back up, through your favourite podcast client.
Yeah, we've got a bit of catching up to do, but it'll be done soon, folks.
Yep, we promise, we promise. What are we going to start? Oh, we've got to say Radiothon, of course. You heard the Radiothon cart, but of course you don't need to wait till Radiothon. You can text us right now on 0488 809 855. That's 0488 809 855, and do your bit.
Yeah, or come and drop into the station at here at 21 Smith Street.
Yeah, just, you know how to do it. You're not idiots. Just get some money to us. But anyway, we'll save that for the Radiothon week. The thing I wanted to just mention before we start into the things that, sorry, Mercedes, the things we agreed we were going to talk about, is I saw a news article today about China and how they seem to have plateaued with their greenhouse gas emissions, and another one about how their electric vehicles are now cheaper than their combustion vehicles. And I went through and I looked at it just earlier today, it was, and I was looking through and it didn't sound right. So I was looking at all the Australian media about all these stories about China and China and China and China. Weeks ago, months ago, when Donald Trump and his mini-me said they were going to cut US aid, I did a bit of a story about how most US aid, a huge chunk of US aid, was being used to prop up alternative media in places like Georgia and Ukraine and all over the world. And then I came back and pointed out that US aid was actually funding a whole lot of stuff in Australia with the Australian Strategic Policy Institute and the Australian US Study Centre and all the rest of it, and that had also been cut, and therefore mobs like the Australian Strategic Policy Institute weren't writing all their articles and shit sheets on China anymore. And it just seems to me that this has had so much of an effect now that I went through the ABC's recent articles on China, and the Channel 9 media and the Murdoch media, and none of them have been getting grabs from the US Study Centre or the RSP or any of the rest of it.
Yeah, the proliferation of these right-wing think tanks has reduced quite dramatically.
Quite dramatically with the cut to USA. Now, it can't be coincidence. It's happening, but I just wanted to say that. You heard it here first.
Yeah, a few weeks ago we spoke about that, and I think you said exactly the same thing.
Yeah. And it's it makes me laugh, and it makes, I mean, look, cuts to US aid have hurt people.
There's
no question. But the other part of it that makes me sort of have a bit of a sly chuckle is that all over the world, all these right-wing think tanks and right-wing journalist support groups and true news outlets and all that kind of stuff aren't working anymore. Not even, and they're not working in places like Australia. Imagine what they're like in places like Azerbaijan and Georgia and Egypt and everywhere else. So good on you.
I just think about Carl Unger weeping.
Yeah. Let him weep. Weep, Carl, weep. But he's doing all right.
He's a consultant for the defence industry now, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Probably always was.
Probably, yeah, he could probably afford a less gold threads in his silk handkerchief to weep into than he would have been otherwise.
Oh, all right. But this week on a Friday rave, we've got a few things to cover today, and I guess they all kind of wrap in into some similar things. But we're going to start off with a few weeks ago, the Ukrainian government announced a new program that they're launching called Brave One, and the website is up online now, the government website for Brave One, and it's called a United Coordinational Platform for Defence Tech powered by the government. And so basically what Brave One is this this government, Ukrainian government initiative to try and get government and private sector defence tech firms to collaborate on and pitch ideas for development to get more weapons to the front lines. And one of the so it's called a Brave One cluster. and so, you know, there's welcoming international partners and investors in corporations and things like that to work at really streamlining the approach to develop weapons. But one of the really fucked things, I mean, it's all it all is, but in particular with the Brave One, is this system that through Brave One they're instituting. It's kind of like a point for kills system. And so it's pretty much like a video game where certain parts of the Ukrainian military, or what do they call it, battalions?
Battalions, yeah.
Battalions get points, what they call balls, for shooting down a drone, which is, I think, about 50 points for destroying...
Killing a soldier.
Killing a soldier. Exactly, 6 points or 6 balls. Is the point system that they're saying that they're offering. But it's based on a point system. And so as the battalion increases the amount of points or balls that they get for each time that they kill someone, destroy a drone, damage a drone, damage an artillery system or anything like that, they get points. And then they then use those points to buy directly from the one-stop shop, which is Brave One, to get more weapons directly to their battalions.
But they've got to prove that they've made the kill. And this reminds me of the days when, under King Leopold II in Congo, he used to collect ears and cut people's ears off, and you'd be issued with new bullets.
Mm. It's exactly the same thing.
It's exactly the same thing. And this is like 150 years ago now, and we haven't progressed at all, except we're handing out drones rather than bullets.
And that, well, drones or any sort of artillery that they can choose from, and they've kind of marketed it as almost like an Amazon for weapons for the Ukrainian military. And when we were chatting about it, I was just thinking about this idea of, like, we know that video games have been used for recruitment purposes. If, you know, you get a kid who's, or someone who's really good at video games, and then they kind of, funnily enough, get a letter, you know, asking if they want to join the military, and not quite often the US military. but how that's kind of like shifted around, and now the video game, this idea of where you get points for kills, essentially, is
in
you
real
get more
life.
Points, and it's real life. It's just really... Ooh.
Yeah, and it's and currently I'm just, but there's also, just like video games, a leaders board. I can see the 414th Infantry Brigade, called the Birds of the Magyar, are leading it at the moment. And then there's the Central Security Service of the SPU, the Lazar Group, 3OHSBR, OSHBR. So there's actually a leaderboard of who's making the most kills and who's getting the more points and who's getting the most weapons.
I wonder how many points Ben Robert Smith would have.
Oh, Ben Robert Smith. That's a nice little segue, mate. Ben Robert Smith, he'd have a few points, although all his points in the world wouldn't be enough to stop his photos being taken down from the Australian War Memorial. Ben Robert Smith lost his appeal.
Of course he did.
Because he's guilty of what he calls these egregious, spiteful allegations. that he actually murdered people in Afghanistan in 2012, and he's now going to take it to the High Court. Now, it strikes me that you got this bloke, right? He gets charged with murder. He's not charged with murder. He gets accused of murder, basically. So much stuff comes out. So, you know, pictures of him drinking a beer out of a dead bloke's prosthetic limb and all this kind of stuff. And he gets appeal after appeal, and now he's taken to the High Court. And then you think of some of, you know...
But he's taken it's for against the Fairfax and Nine for it's a defamation.
It's case. A defamation, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, they just get chance after chance after chance after chance, and then you look at some of our kids, you know, being held in places like Dondale Detention Centre, and even some young activists who, you know, have been picked up for
whatever
for protests and whatever. Imagine saying, oh, well, you can take this to the appeals court, then you can take it to the Supreme Court, then you can take it to the High Court. This is like, if nothing else, this shows the two-tiered system of justice that we have in Australia. You've got this bloke, and I urge you, you don't need to even read the shit. Just do a DuckDuckGo search or use your favourite search engine and just have a look at this bloke.
Yeah.
Just look at his pictures. I mean, yeah. So that's what's happening there, and whatchamacallit. News has come out, of course, in recent times, when it was released by Michael West Media on the 22nd of this month, and I don't even know what the date is today, 23rd, so only yesterday. That the US Air Force Liberty Surveillance plane was capturing all this over Darwin in Ruzgan province at the time of Ben Robert Smith's alleged war crimes, and who it's now seeming like the powers that be, the boffins sitting in Canberra, were aware of what was happening because they collected thousands of hours of film footage per day.
Per day.
Per day. Mm. Now, thousands of hours per day means hundreds of cameras going.
Yeah.
It's absolutely... the amount of information they had is mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
And they wouldn't, you know, like the tools that they would have had then, but have even been strengthened now to sift through, like using artificial intelligence to sift through that data and look for it. If they really like wanted to, they'd be able to find with that surveillance data and to say that they didn't know that this was happening or that this couldn't happen.
They see what they want to see and they hear what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking like they were aware of all this happening the whole time. Okay, so that's the part. So I was going to make the big call and call Ben Robert Smith the ass hat of the week, but he's not. He's you know, in some ways he's the ass hat of the year, he's the ass hat of the world, but he's not an ass hat. This is a bloke who all his life has been told that he's the best, that he's untouchable, that he can do whatever the hell he wants, whether it's on a cricket pitch or a footy field or in the classroom or whatever, from day one.
Mm.
They put him in this position and they say, you're untouchable, son, you're untouchable, son, you're untouchable, son. And they send him over to Afghanistan and they say, do what you need to do. And so he does what he's been trained to do his whole life. Mm. Kill people, put people down, steal their prosthetic limbs, treat people like dirt.
Yeah.
And have
the protection to do it.
Not only the protection, but have them celebrated. Australia's most decorated soldier. Picture of him in the war memorial. So anyway, enough we can say. But anyway, we're talking about how much information they've got.
Yeah.
Not quite as smooth a segue as your last one, but a segue nonetheless.
A segue nonetheless. So there's been some contract documents out of the Office of Director of National Intelligence in the US who are The issue, I guess, that they've seen in the open source the intelligence community has seen was that there is so much commercial data that is available, and that the intelligence community is needing, you know, to go through court processes in order to access the data on people they might be looking for or wanting to look into, and that they're paying, you know, it's really hard to determine whether they're paying too much. Sometimes they pay for it and it doesn't get used. And so there's now a contract looking from the Office of Director, Office of the Director of National Intelligence to, they're looking for vendors to develop, private vendors, to develop a system which centralizes all of this data, commercially available information, which they called CAI.
So the CIA using CAI.
And so this would be all of the intelligence community in the US to centralize all of this data, which then becomes on a portal, which anyone, like anyone in the intelligence community, can access the portal and have access to all of that data, rather than go through the process of courts and to contact private private surveillance, private companies, rather. And so they're wanting to centralize all of the data, and so that they can just log in, click of a button, and then they can find whatever you're looking for. But there's obviously some really, like, it's fucked.
Well, there are some big legal, there are some big concerns here, and look, there are concerns which are twofold. First one is their access to information. This thing, the ICDC, I think they're calling it,
the Intelligence Community Data Consortium.
Data Consortium. When you say they're putting out, first of all, when you say they're looking for people to do it, they know who's going to do it. I mean, the companies have already presented before they announced they were going to do this. They're announcing they're doing this because two companies have presented to the intelligence community saying this is what you need.
Yeah, contract by limited tender.
Contract by limited tender, exactly. Anomaly 6 is one of them, and Signal Labs. And but anyway, we haven't got that much time to go into the so deep into it. But the problem is, as I was saying to you when we first discussed this, because I'm a fair bit older than you, when I was a young bloke and we used to go and do our shopping, if I wanted to get a box of Weet-Bix, I'd have to ask for a box of Weet-Bix. There were no supermarkets. And if you didn't know Fruit Loops existed to ask for them, you didn't get them. But then we had supermarkets where we've got all this stuff in front of us. And I guess that's the difference with what they're doing here. Like, nothing they're going to have available hasn't or isn't already available. But what it does is it puts it all out on the shelf that we can just pick and choose. And the agencies and the agents, and when we say agents, there are 18 agencies within the US intelligence community. And most of those agencies actually employ subcontractors to work for them. So we're talking about thousands of people. All right.
And just the data that is going to be accessible is data like from Google, from social media platforms, from everything, from location data, from marketing ads, from everywhere, wherever you ping from. Like, that's the kind of data that is going to be available within this.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. All your metadata.
Yep.
And that includes WhatsApp and Signal and all the rest of it. Think for a moment that just because you use a encrypted messaging service that you're safe.
Yeah, they might not be able to access the content as easily. But the metadata from, like, a Signal pings to Amazon servers, and so the metadata still exists. And whoever, I've said it this week already.
Yep.
But whoever has the metadata can therefore, they don't need the content to construct a narrative. And this is the predictive nature of it.
That's right. That's right. And they're just going to have it laid out in front of them. So nothing's going to be available that isn't already available, but it's just going to be better catalogued on their desktops. There's going to be the portal, by the way, keep your eyes on it. I'm just looking for the address here. I've got it somewhere.
Oh, here it is.
On the steam-powered laptop.
All the W's at .ic. Data, ICDATA dot gov.
ICDATA.gov.
Yeah, so that's not live yet, but
Well, it wasn't live an hour ago. I'm just going to hit it again now. No, still not live.
Still not live.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it will be soon, so keep your eyes on that. This is, they've now got, and when we say the US Intelligence Network, we are part of the Five Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so when you talk about what's happening in the US, it's happening here as well. All the data that's going to be available is not just commercially available information. It's also about the information that's being collected from the various base stations in Australia, not just Pine Gap, but there are plenty of Echelon stations in Australia.
High security surveillance that will be accessible by those platforms.
Not just
commercially available data.
But all the data. And, you know, as one of the people who used to be an analyst for a private contractor, actually working as a private contractor for a private contractor that was subcontracting one of the intelligence agencies, Edward Snowden was working for Booz Allen, has put out so much information, including the fact that all the information available to the NSA, which is one of these people, is also available to Israeli signals intelligence.
Yeah.
So you can imagine Israeli signals intelligence getting so much at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we know that. I think it was a little while ago now, probably about a year ago, that you talked about Project Esther.
Oh, Project Esther.
Yeah.
And that's another great segue because Project Esther is back in the news. Or not back in the news because it wasn't in the news.
You heard it here first.
We spoke about it when it first happened about a year ago. But Project Esther, for the people who don't remember or didn't listen to the initial show, was put out by the Heritage project of the Heritage Foundation with a stated aim of dismantling the pro-Palestinian movement. All right? And went through a whole lot of ways that they were going to do that, and primarily it was about calling anyone in the pro-Palestine movement a Hamas sympathiser or a Hamas-supporting organisation. Absolutely evil. And it was set up by all kinds of people. Victoria Coates, who's a former national security advisor for Trump's first term, deputy security advisor, sorry. They put out a whole lot. I'm just trying to look through the thing here now. You know, we recognise any attempt to delegitimise, boycott, divest or sanction the modern state of Israel must be condemned. We recognise that anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are the different manifestations of the same hatred against Jewish people. So there's put it out there early. Like, I mean, they're not the first people to say that criticism of Israel is hate speech. But they actually spoke about clamping down on the universities.
Yeah, it was on-campus protest it's a real target, I guess, of Project Esther. And they've said they're going to mobilise a coalition of private organisations in order to develop the network of what they've labelled as Hamas-supporting networks.
And HSOs.
And what we've seen happen is, like, and I guess the segues fit, because when you think about something like the one-stop shop for data that we were just talking about, is like, well, where the access comes from, that makes it easier for the Trump administration not only to find people and you know, steal them, snatch them from their homes and the streets and their schools and deport them to El Salvador through all of this data, but also for student protesters or any protesters, of all of that data is going to be available. And it's like you said, going in and you, instead of asking for some Weet-Bix, if you see it all in front of you, you can just grab that whole data set and run it through.
That's right.
And then so what what does this mean, you know, in terms of this is exactly what it means. And even though the, you know, the Trump administration is not necessarily the parallels, I guess, between the desired outcomes of Project Esther we're seeing in what is happening in the US. And there's, like, make no mistake that there's that's also these same networks are operating here in
of
the way.
Of course they're happening,
you know,
here.
And there was, like, a on-campus protest organized that the Israeli government have released a risk assessment of, and that's published on their website about what that protest is. And they've looked at social media posts. They've got the counts of the accounts. They've, like, you know,
says, Uni Melbourne for Palestine, Uni Melbourne Islamic Society, Law Students for Refugees.
Yeah, and so they've got these posts and are developing the risk assessments of these. And, of course, it's not necessarily people, but what it gives access to is these massive data sets that are run through AI that then are extracted, pulled through all of your information, and it gets a whole human terrain map of what these networks are.
Yeah, and just to clarify, what's happening here is the Israeli government's National Center for Combating Anti-Semitism, under their Ministry for Diaspora Affairs and Combating Anti-Semitism, actually speak about things that are happening in Australia.
Yep.
And provide risk assessments, you know, name, description of incident. This one, planned protest by pro-Palestinian activists, so organising groups, location, date, coordinates, military coordinates, if you happen to have a spare zone that you've just picked up off Brave One.
Yeah.
The coordinates, risk level, medium. You know, we're going to have a protest, and a pro-Palestine protest against a Zionist speaker, and they call the risk level medium.
Mm.
And then they go and talk about the organisations who are called to protest, how many followers they have on Instagram.
How many likes the post has received.
How many likes. And so...
And it does say in the fine print down the bottom that this information is received through a network monitoring with the assistance of technologies, of a technological system.
Yeah.
And so that technological system is not people looking at this. It's extracting massive data sets from commercially available information, which are then, and then also that the Israeli government has access to, just like the US government has access to, and that expands its intelligence community and then runs it through a system, and then from there it spreads. So it's like when we think about how we, like, this is what's happening with our data and we know it.
Yeah.
And we need to be absolutely prepared and across that of this is what they know, because whoever has that metadata and that data can develop a narrative to suit.
Yeah, that's it. So if you've ever liked a post of a pro-Palestinian organisation in Australia, you can rest assured that you have been monitored and logged by the National Centre for Combating Anti-Semitism over in Israel.
Yeah.
And that's all we got time for.
That's all we got time for. The good folks at Radio MMT are about to come up, come into the studio, and we'll have another yarn with you next week.
Okay, until then.
And don't forget Radiothon.